You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
What are you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. The government cares about
they
you.
They ain't giving up a second thought about you. No. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah, ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Excuse me. And I am your host, Brother Oshi, Hotel family. Hope everything is well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. Of course, if it was not, and it had to get done, it must be done. It's imperative. You did it. Because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And that's why we have a lot of admiration and love and respect for you. Because you don't put things off, you get it done. And you do it safely. Exactly. You do it safely. You wear your mask. You keep your distance. You keep your hands clean. You're very cognizant of that. You know, you may have a shot or the jab, or you may not have the jab. That's up to you. But whatever you do, be very well aware of what time it is. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that, and then there will be a drop down, and there's African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. But you can also go to BabaOshi.net, BABAOSHI.net. And there will be programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother, Brother Kwaku. And I just want to say I couldn't do this program without him. I'll tell you, last Friday, of course, if you listen to this program, and I know there are a few people that do, and I appreciate that tremendously. Some called me and said, "What's up?" Well, I couldn't break the stream. I couldn't break the stream and do my program as usual. It prevented me from not doing that, but we got it together, and I'm glad that you're listening, and we're trying to do our best to keep it that way if we can. We couldn't break the stream, but Brother Kwaku got it together, even though he's out of town, and I appreciate you, man, no doubt. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia, Brother Jahad Ahmed at from 6 to 8. And then from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and the Taki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays, Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9. On Wednesdays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening at 8 p.m. on Fridays. Saturday from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council on Saturdays from 7 to 9. And then on Sundays at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215 215- 490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tayemba, who is going to be my guest this past Friday. This Friday coming up is going to be Akil Parker. Haven't had Brother Akil Parker out of Philadelphia, educator, mathematician, in quite a while. So I'm looking forward to seeing a Brother Akil. And so Africa for the Africans and Brother Bomani, I'll talk with him, see if we can get him on real soon. I know he doesn't have a tour until November 18th through the 29th to Tanzania, and then December 24th to January 5th, 2022 to Ghana, and then Senegal and Gambia, April 1st through the 11th, 2022, and then Ghana again, May 24th to June 5th, 2022. And right now, the cost is $3,700. Everything you need to know or to do is on the website at africa40africans.org. Brothers and sisters, if you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. If you want to see pictures, go to facebook.com/Bomani. And believe me, they're beautiful, man. I'm telling you, brother, it's an outstanding job. Everything that you need is right there. Okay? Right there. Habashah Incorporated.org. Habashah Incorporated.org. They're doing the work. Habashah stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. They are doing the work. They're doing the work here in the Atlanta area with the Habashah Works program. Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and the Urban Green Jobs. And they're doing the work in, and they're doing the work in Ghana with the Kashi Project. If you want to see pictures of what's happening, please, brothers and sisters, go to HabashahIncorporated.org. HabashahIncorporated.org. The LEDGE program. LEDGE stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. The LEDGE program works in the four areas of human existence, which is food, water, clothing, and shelter, providing them for the brothers and sisters on the motherland. And they have 12 projects. They're in six different countries with over 170 employed and over 260 members. They need more members, brothers and sisters. You should become a member. If you do become a member, you can get some land in Tanzania. That's right. You can get land in Tanzania. It'd only be for $250 an acre. Put a G down and get you, 4 acres of land. Imagine what you can do. Things you can build. Everything will be self-sustaining. Brothers and sisters, this is the move for us. We must go back home. Repatriation. That's what Brother Bomani will be talking about when we get him back on the program again. Repatriation. Bibi Atumi. Bibi Atumi. ABIBITUMI.com. BibiAtumi.com. Brothers and sisters, go to BibiAtumi.com. And on the website, you'll have all kinds of good stuff that you can, deal with, the shopping, the news feeds, the events, the crowdfunding, all of these good things right there on bibiatumi.com. Make it a favorite. Bibiatumi, ABIBITUMI.com. Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar here in the West End. Here in Atlanta, I'm Ralph David Abernathy. Right across, they have delicious smoothies, fruit drinks, all kinds of health stuff, and pastries and wraps. Wadada's, give them a call at 404-444-1635. 404-444-1635. Right across the street from Soul Vegetarian, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which is open on Fridays and Saturdays. The Shrine is open from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Fridays and Saturdays. Because, you can buy all kinds of stuff at the Shrine. clothing, jewelry, books, definitely books, the red, black, and green shoes. They even have an African Holocaust Museum in there. They're going to resume, saw Brother Olatunji, they're going to resume the classes, going to be online. So they're going to do that, okay? They're going to do that because they have church services online. Okay, all right. And the Meddu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia, she has a new location. Check her out if you're in the Atlanta area. The Greenbrier Mall, right off of Georgia Highway 166, the Greenbrier Mall. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. Mama Nia, the Meddu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, which is east of here of Atlanta. My good brother Kazim Diajamu, done great work with the place. They have a nice coffee bar. Oh, it looks really nice, brother Kazim Diajamu is getting it together. Give them a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. There's light in the Black Dot. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, in the spirit of Ujamaa, Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, Family Center Economics, their Thursday night broadcast, every Thursday night on Blog Talk Radio. That's Blog Talk Radio, every Thursday night from 9 to 10. 1 hour, brothers and sisters. It's an impactful 1 hour. Go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU, Us Lifting Us. Okay, every Thursday night at 9, from 9 to 10. Thursday night from 9 to 10. And the number to call is 9. And you can call this number just to listen, or you can go online to blacktalkradio.com and put in ULU. Or you can dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Homeland Village Cultural Gift Shop in Macon. 2910 Napier Avenue in Macon. The number to call is 478-256-1166. 478-256-1166. If you are in Macon, brothers and sisters, I'll be going there or driving through, you got to stop at the Homeland Village Cultural Gift Shop. The brother has everything. They have all kind of activities going on there, events going on there. I'll probably get the brother on the program real soon. We can talk about the Homeland Village. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia. It's inside the discount, the International Discount Mall, booth 225. That's right. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop. Give our sister Shelly Amonset a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Natural. Your one-stop natural shop. Sun Goddess Sense. Man, I'm having trouble here, man. I'm telling you. I'll be all right. I'll be all right. You know. Okay. Sanjay Dash Aidi, Sister Gabby, who's doing outstanding work on the island of Haiti, in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. And, you know, that's pretty opposite of where the recent earthquake hit, which is the southwestern portion of Haiti. And so go online to Sanjay, SONJE-HAITI.org. And check it out and see for yourself. Sanjay Dash Haiti. Baba Barudi, he has a program this Thursday, September 2nd. This Thursday, September 2nd, Common Sense Security, a special lecture by Baba Barudi. And it's at 7 p.m. It's a Zoom call. And there's a registration required, a $10 entry fee. Email blackawakeningmovement@gmail.com. That's blackawakeningmovement@gmail.com to
get to particulars on the Common Sense Security lecture this Thursday at 7 p.m. Baba Baruti. Also, too, of course, as always, promoting Baba Baruti's Institute, the Aqaba Institute here in Atlanta that educates our young warriors. If you want to pay by PayPal or Cash App, for Cash App, the dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. You can make your constant payments and to support the outstanding work that they're doing. If you want to get books by Baba Baruti, go to AqabinHouse.com, AqabinHouse.com, and the array of books that Baba Baruti and Mama Yah put together for our people. Yeah. I tell you. The Inye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Of course, I had three of them to read this past weekend. I'll get to them. I'll get back to them. I'm just going to read yesterday and today's Inye Sasim. And of course, as always, it's always pertinent, even to the topic I'm going to be talking about. You know, it just happens that way. That's how the ancestors are. For sure. Oh, make you want to holler the way they do my life. Make you want to holler the way they do my life. This ain't living. This ain't living. Nah, baby. This ain't living. Nah. That's right. That's right, our good brother, Marvin Gaye. This ain't living. Our children see the hand we have been dealt. They understand the concept of powerlessness as it applies to us and especially them. We do not see the violence against and among them and not understand its source. Has the idea of statistically measuring the probability of their incarceration from birth become so academic and their increasing suicide rate so normalized that both and more equally horrific facts against them have grown beyond our skills at cultural comprehension? Are there natural yearnings for adults who are psychologically and emotionally mature enough to protect them, truthfully educate them, and provide them with a nurturing visionary discipline, something that we cannot find within ourselves? They are the primary prey of Urugu. Why would they not prefer to die young? Our children see how our adults are mistreated, and they have been socialized into a backward arrogance of youth that makes the disrespect of others easy, and still notice the reverence accorded our elders. The irreverence they recognize wanton disrespect. Why would they want to grow old? Why would they see life as precious and wisdom as admirable? Why would they not prefer to die young? Damn. Affirm, I am making a way for my people to live without pain. Affirm, I am making a way for my people to live without pain. August 30th. Consciously creating life, the quintessential element of revolution supreme. Nairobi, Shalah. The seeds need the trees that produce them to stand tall against the battering winds of and the cold fronts. They need the shelter of the canopy of the community of trees to protect them from the storms that rage down from sunless skies and the sun itself when it is most dangerous radiations pictured for our spiritual intriguement. Their greatest and most natural nourishment comes from the leaves which have returned to the earth to decompose into the richness of blackness. This is some fantastic analogy, uncompromisably, because our root system has been shredded and many seeding trees weakened by generations of seeds planted in a land made infertile. Strength is not a complement end to achieve when the vision is righteous and held within the branches which have risen like the phoenix above the destruction. All that needs to be done by warriors is to find like-minded adults, build sacred spaces, protect the children with our lives. Affirm, I am a protector. Affirm, I am a protector. The Inye Sesem of daily revolutionary thought. The Inye Sesem. Okay. There is no historical instance of a formerly enslaved people who valued integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandoned the superiority or the superior wealth of their own homeland. It's sad, ain't it? There is no other historical instance that you can't find at nowhere, where a people who were enslaved by another people who value integration with that captor to the point that they would completely abandon the superior wealth, all the mineral resources everybody needs, and the land, their homeland. Wow. Minds are messed up. Your mind is messed up. You know, today I'm going to deal with one of the issues that of why or the origins of anti-blackness. I'm going to deal with the origins of anti-blackness. How did it happen? And why it persists? And why do we still feel that that's what it's all about? You know? Yeah. And what was funny about it, I went on Facebook. That's why I picked up, of course, the advertisement for Baba Barudi. What was interesting, if you have Facebook and you see the first thing and they have something that happened some time ago, well, I did a program when I was still with Blog Talk. This program is from September 3rd, around this time. 2016, 5 years ago, and there was the curse of Ham, biblical or white supremacy. And of course, the curse of Ham is what we're going to pretty much touch on today. You know, that was ironic. Like I said, a lot of times the things you're going to talk about, there's some other things that when you're looking for something that present itself and it is supportive, you know. Yeah. I know one of the things, of course, is the African origins of comedic life and culture and spirituality. And of course, Caucasians. In fact, one of the things that led me to the subject today is the fact that Caucasians had this one guy recently. Just recently, still comes up with this idea that ancient Egypt was white. He used three samples, and all of them were taken from burials in the north of Kemet. Now, Kemet was southern led. They came from the south, and Jop proved this. In fact, it took a long time for him to have access to the mummies when he had developed the melanin dosage test, when you could extract from the mummies the melanin and determine what is the amount, what is the percentages of melanin. That just ended it. To me, that's the smoking gun. That ended the debate. But yet this Caucasian comes up with, I mean, once again, they are relentless. in their pursuit of dominance. They are relentless. You know, this happened just recently. This happened like, I think 2017 or something like that. You know, the Dyscaucasian came up with the SD. You know, they're still trying to dominate information about the world. That's like what Dr. John Henry Clark said. It's one thing when you dominate the world, but you're trying to dominate information and control information about the world. And of course you must do, because you ain't nothing but a damn liar. A prevaricator. And so, as I always say, that we owe a great debt of gratitude to Dr. Shingata Jop, but he wouldn't pronounce it Jop or Diop, and Dr. Thelophilio Bingle, his partner, who was a linguistic. They were the only two at that conference in 1974. 20 people, 18 Caucasians and them two. And the 18 Caucasians were adamant about Egypt being white or Arab or Asiatic, Caucasian, either Western Arab or Asiatic, whatever. And they were the only two. And they kicked ass. They kicked ass. So we always owe them. Another person that we owed in terms of helping us understand the dynamics of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, that's how I term it, because I don't use the word white, and it's shown hell ain't supreme, but sometimes you got to use that word because of the context in which you're trying to deal with it. So white supremacy. But Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, and I'm going to do a piece on her because she's just dynamic. Frances is dynamic. Frances Cress Welsing. Once again, you know, I sometimes come into a city and then I find out about something and bam, there I am. Just like when I was in D.C. for something, I think it was the Pan-African, and I found out about Renoco being in D.C., you know, and I went to the, it was being held, he was being hosted by Brother Sangor Bey, who was my guest back when Renoco on that Friday was supposed to be my guest. Brother Sangor was, appreciate that. And Renoco's doing a presentation. Then another time, I found out that Frances was doing a presentation in the hotel because I was at Harambe. She would do presentations. Now, Harambe Hotel was independent one time, and I believe that Howard University got the hotel, and they use it for hospitality to train and teach students for hospitality, how to manage and run a hotel. And caught Frances at another time in D.C. So, you know, sometimes when I'm going somewhere, I'm fortunate and lucky and blessed to find information of our scholars and our historians and our beautiful brothers and sisters. And such is the case of things. Same thing with Tony Browder. In fact, I was walking from Harambe. I was there University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. No, University of Wisconsin extended programs. And with Native Americans, Latinos, and us, how to deal with public policy. And so I just was walking in the neighborhood, and there's an elementary school, and Kathy Hughes and Anthony Browder. Yeah. And I had already had his book, you know, from the Browder file. You know, this is before he came up with Nile Valley Contributions. Great work, fun work. Good read. Brother Tony Browder did a good job of presenting information to our people about Renoco, and had a good tribute to Renoco last week. And I'll give the information about how you can contribute to Renoco, if that's what you choose to do, and hope that you do, to further his, and to assist with his daughter. So, yeah. Dr. Thelophilio Obenga. But you know, I like this quote by Baba Baruti. You know, if you have unfriended Baba Baruti, you should Facebook, if you have Facebook, because he sends out, I mean, some good little narratives. They're outstanding. And this one is power and influence. Power and influence. You know, we don't understand power. We don't understand power and what power is. Power is the ability to define reality, then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. Europeans define reality. When Europeans were in that dark age, that medieval age, they went around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of power. They defined reality and they imposed it. If you accept their reality as if it's your own, they'll control you. If you don't, they'll kill you. They'll kill you. Europeans define reality. The question that we as African people must ask ourselves is, who are we in their reality? To justify our captivity, we were the soulless people, no culture to speak of. That's who we were in their reality then. Justifying rounding us up, putting us in dungeons, then putting us on ships, bringing us to this hemisphere, and then making us work from can't see in the morning to can't see at night. Then when the world understood how inhumane this was and captivity began to end physically, the mental captivity took shape. The question we need to ask once again is, who are we in their reality? And with thugs, drug addicts, no fit fathers, no fit mothers, gangsters, the scourge, justifying mass incarceration, justifying elimination. That's who we are in their reality. Yeah. We're going to talk about, let me read this from Baba Baruti, though. It's a good piece. In general, power is the direct, unmitigated exercise of self-determining conscious thought, regardless of others' interests or interference. It is the uncompromised actualization of one's will into existence with the force that prevents any successful challenge to its determined presence. There is no questioning conscious, historically grounded, spirit-driven power. Influence, on the other hand, is not power. Influence is not power. Influence is not power. Historically grounded, spirit-driven power. Influence, on the other hand, is not power. It is the attempt to alter another more powerful individual or group's opinion or actions in your advantage. It is of a lesser breed. Sociologically speaking, you know, one cannot exercise influence as a means of forcing one's will. One of the two, only power can be effectively exercised in this way. The exercise of a threat of exercising power falls within the domain of power, not influence. Therefore, outside of the intervention of influencers, charisma, which is unlikely to seriously impact those well-trained in manipulation, influence is the act of belief in chance. It is an exception of a possibility based on goodwill, gullibility, and or objective humanity of power holders. In the case of Africans relative to Europeans, it is an act of wishful hoping against the record of history. It is an attempt at a pretense that gives the illusion of integrity and substance to a voluntary civil manhood. That's right. Power. The ability to define reality. That's why, brothers, we'll never have power. Not in their world. This is theirs, not ours. No power in this. It happens the way it happens. And unfortunately, it happens that way. I'm going to play a piece from Francis, and that may take us up to the time. This is an interview she did with Karen Hunter on Karen Hunter's show. It's not long. And I got to play some commercials, too, so I got
to
be careful.
I actually wanted to have this woman on the show since my trial run in August. My dad bought this book back in the 90s, and it was something like required reading in my home. And I called my mom the other night because it was sitting on our kitchen. We had a kitchen, countertop with cookbooks and other books that were relevant. And it was sitting there and I called up and I said, "Ma, do you remember this book?" And she's like, "It must be with your dad's books in the closet. I'll go get it." And it was right there. And it's got his name in it. You see? Mm-hmm. That's my dad. And it's marked up. He even found like mistakes in it and stuff. That's how anal he was. And circled pages and stuff. But this was required reading because for my father, it was so important that I and my brother understood the society in which we live. And the ISIS papers, The Keys to the Colors by Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. It's a series of essays. It's heavy, heavy. It's not like, you can't read. It's not like Harry Potter. You're going to want to, take it one chapter at a time, digest it. You might want to mark it up. You might want to have some questions, heavily footnoted. And this is a woman who is extremely serious. She's a psychiatrist today, still practicing psychiatry, which means she had to go fully to medical school. That's like heavy duty brain power there. And I'm just so honored, similar to having Dick Gregory on the show for me, to be able to speak to some of our elders who have actually been in the trenches, putting out knowledge in a way. I don't ever want to forget that. So I always am paying homage to people who are doing the work. And so I want to welcome to the show Dr. Francis Cress Welsing.
Well, thank you, Karen. I'm very glad to be with you.
Shoot.
What's wrong?
I think I'm down on my last inhaler.
Sorry.
Don't worry. You can refill it and get it to...
You know, the ISIS papers, became to me like symbolic. Every day I'm listening to ISIS. And I was getting angry because I'm like, I refuse to call them ISIS. I refuse to call them ISIS. They're not going to usurp this name. And they're not going to take this name and bastardize it and turn it into something else. You named your book The ISIS Papers for what reason?
Well, ISIS is an Egyptian goddess, and I read that truth was more important than silver and gold. Mm. And I just thought that that was significant, and so that was the primary reason that I named the book that. And I think that it's not really quite an accident that the Western powers have made ISIS the enemy.
So you're taking it there.
Right.
Okay.
I think that because also you may never have seen a copy of my first paper, The Cress Theory of Color Confrontation and Racism, White Supremacy, that has a black circle on the cover with a small white circle center. And if you cut a rectangle out of the middle of that, you see the ISIS flag. So the flag that we're told represents this terrorist group that is called ISIS. So I just say that it's very significant since all of my work is about racism, white supremacy.
So you're looking at this ISIS crisis, if I can use that, as propaganda?
Well, no. In other words, the discussion of racism is not a preferred topic in our society. And if you remember, Attorney General Eric Holder raised the question, are we a nation of cowards being unable to talk about racism? Racism, white supremacy is the most powerful dynamic on the entire planet.
And it's the one thing that we don't ever talk about.
And it's honestly the one thing, do you see, and when people don't talk about something, it's either they are afraid to do so or to talk about it will cause serious harm. I mean, once you understand the whys and wherefores, the in-depth reason for a whole oppressive dynamic, then the people have the keys to unraveling that dynamic and potentially replacing the unjust dynamic of racism, white supremacy with a system of justice.
So
and
the
justice meaning no one is mistreated, no one is allowed to be mistreated, and those who need the most help get the most help.
And that would seem to be, to me, an ideal situation. For some reason, it's not something that we adhere to.
One would think, but that is antithetical to the survival of racism as I have defined it. Like I say, that racism, white supremacy, is a dynamic system for the ultimate purpose of white genetic survival on the planet.
So is it purely planet. That? Because I was going to ask you, why does racism have to survive?
Well, racism, white supremacy is a conscious and or subconscious construct by people who classify themselves as white for their genetic survival. Whites are a tiny minority on the planet, and they're genetic recessive in terms of skin coloration. So let's say if everybody on the planet didn't pay any attention to skin color, and everybody just melded together, and in the words of Dr. Martin Luther King, if everybody loved one another, and that love was expressed in terms of sexual activity and reproduction, then white would disappear.
And what would happen then?
And so if the people who classify themselves as white do not want to disappear, then they have to set up certain kinds of patterns of behavior in all areas of people activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, sex, and war.
That is so fascinating to me because I'm always thinking, how did this all start? Like, when was the first person who got up and said, hey, wait a minute, this skin color thing, I got to keep this going. And let's hatch a plan to make sure that, like, I'm like, what rooms, you know, I'm going through your book and I actually went to the German piece back in 1942, and I went online and studied that, and we know what happened with Nazi Germany with the Semites and that whole plan. It was like such a diabolical but like plan that was working to perfection until Hitler decided, hey, you know what, France is looking really good to me in England, let me expand my territory even more. And he got, you know, and I think I often argue, had he just stayed in his lane, he would have been able to effectively do exactly what he set out to do.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, in your subtitle, it's the ISIS Papers, The Keys to the Colors, you write that subtitle came from a statement made to you by a patient in Washington, D.C., a public mental health clinic back in the 1960s, the late 1960s. You said the patient was a tall, thin, middle-aged, black-skinned man who, in a somewhat confused manner, talked earnestly to me about the problems he had experienced in his life. He said, "Doctor, if we could just find the keys to the colors." And he repeated it slowly. It was a statement I have never been able to forget, and this work is a portion of my response. Speak to that a little bit.
Well, I was a psychiatrist in training, and thinking about what is causing black people to be mentally ill. I'm a third-generation physician. My father was a physician, and his father was a physician in Chicago. And so, you know, solving the healthcare problems of black people was something that was a tradition in my family.
Wait, so just back up. So, because I'm thinking about the time in which you became a doctor, your father was a doctor.
Right, and his father
was a doctor. How is that even possible? Like, I'm thinking about, this had to be, what, the early 1900s that
my
your grandfather?
My grandfather, Dr. Henry Claycrest, died in 1909.
So he had to be a doctor in the 1800s.
Right.
Where did he get a medical degree in this country?
In Chicago.
Wow.
And my father's a graduate of the University of Illinois Medical School. My mother was a graduate of the University of Chicago. So that was the tradition. And also my grandfather, Henry Claycrest, was interested in politics and the welfare of black people. And he also, my grandmother, who I, you know, lived in our home when we were growing up, would always say your grandfather was a race man, meaning the priority, being concerned about the priority of the race. My grandfather had also written, and I didn't know this until after I had started writing, and my father found some notes that his father had written. And my grandfather had written, how dare anyone think that they are superior because of the color of their skin. Now, he wrote that before 1909. I never knew him. And then I end up writing about...
Frances Cresswell's a good sister.
Comfort, it's a vibe. And Skechers Beach Casuals have that casual look and feel that fits your style perfectly. They're lightweight, understated footwear that slip on and off for easy comfort everywhere your day takes you. Relaxing by the pool or just bouncing around town. Chillin' comfort with Skechers.
Well, the Kress theory was an attempt back in the late 1960s to explain what I thought is it is the Kress theory of color confrontation and racism, white supremacy, an attempt to, as a psychiatrist, as a black psychiatrist, to understand, well, what exactly is this thing that we call racism, white supremacy, looking at why do white people behave in the way that they do, do you see, and concluding that it has to do, number one, with their minority status on the planet, their genetic recessive status, in that they could experience genetic annihilation, in that the overwhelming majority of people on the planet are black, brown, red, and yellow. And whites constitute fewer than one-tenth of the people on the planet.
One of the things that we find that is happening now is there's this constant countdown. You see it on the news all the time. So when America's a majority minority nation, so there's still this countdown happening in terms of when white folks will be in the minority.
They will be a majority minority, which is nonsensical. There will be a white minority. If the non-white, if the black, brown, red, and yellow people are here, they will be the majority and whites will be the minority, you see. And it's a logical, illogical statement to talk about a majority minority, I mean, which is like white supremacy. I still have to put myself on top. I have to pose that I am genetically superior, to compensate. I say it's a compensation for a genetic recessive status. Well, I think I was the first person to talk about white genetic annihilation in those terms, and that racism is ultimately a total system for white genetic survival and to prevent white genetic annihilation on a planet that has the genetics and the demographics that exist on third planet from the sun, which is planet Earth. So I was the first to put it in those terms, and my thesis has not been refuted. I would say that if my definition is understood, that racism, white supremacy is the fear on the part of people who classify themselves as white about white genetic annihilation and the concern for white genetic survival, this would therefore mean logically and specifically that the focus has to be on black males, because black people have the greatest genetic potential to produce the black pigment melanin, which gives all skin color. And since we have the highest level of genetically determined ability to produce this pigment that can cause white genetic annihilation, and it's only males who can impose sexual intercourse. And so the focus consciously, subconsciously, has to zero in on the males. This is why I say that understanding, I'm not talking about institutional racism. I'm talking about a total system construct that develops out of certain patterns of thinking on the part of people who classify themselves as white relative to specific realities that exist on this planet. And so then once that is understood, that the fear of genetic annihilation that takes to the focus on the male, the black male person, as being the number one perceived threat, the number one enemy, and everything flows from that.
Dr. Francis Cress-Wellesley. Yeah, I tell you. Brothers and sisters, we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll go deal with the origins of this concept of Africans being evil and dark and whites being pure and good and whatever. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com. And blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Thank you.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Brothers and sisters, other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And that's followed by, from 8 p.m. to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesday, the Black Farmers Report from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Wednesdays. And then on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, you know it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays, from 4 to 6 on Saturdays, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. And Sunday, once again, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. You know, we definitely sending hope and prayers and meditations to our brothers and sisters in the Gulf area, not just in Louisiana, which of course was hardest hit, particularly Baton Rouge and New Orleans. In fact, all the power is out in New Orleans. The levees that the repairs that they made after Katrina in 05 have helped tremendously, I'm quite sure. But of course, the grid work and other parts, the electricity is down and it may not be back on for a while. And so, man, I tell you, climate change is real. These crackers have messed up the ecology. And anyway, so our prayers and meditations and our thoughts and hope and prayers are with the brothers and sisters in the Gulf area, not just in New Orleans, but in Mississippi, in Florida, Georgia, whatever. And of course, west of Louisiana, you know, Arkansas and Texas, particularly Texas, the Gulf area of Texas, of Galveston and Houston. All of those could be affected. But the storm is leaving that area, and it is moving in a northeastern pattern. They think by Thursday or so, there'll be heavy rains in New York, Philadelphia area. So, I mean, you know, everybody's going, in this part of the country, east of the Mississippi, you're gonna feel this. You're going to feel this storm, man. I played a piece by Francis because, you know, we are talking about racism and color confrontation. And, you know, Francis, her theory, and I agree with her theory, because when Europeans came out of that medieval or dark age and went around the world taking everybody's stuff in the name of, and then being away from Europe for stretches, long stretches, maybe months or even years, and raping the women that they encountered and seeing the offspring did not look like them, causing them to have an innate fear that they could be annihilated. I know people don't want to agree with that, even a lot of us. I know the crackers, Caucasians, didn't want to agree with it, but it's on. But also, too, how did this idea of being black become such a thing as being ugly and reviled and disrespected? How did this happen? What is the origin of this particular idea? Well, I got a piece here. It says, "The origin of anti-black racism in the world." It is theological. It is theological. It is the three religions that have been imposed upon the world. Judaism, no, because Judaism does not seek converts. Judaism is nationalistic and territorial, which is also a fallacy. But Christianity and Islam, they both seek converts, and they both want you to believe that these religions are historical. There's a picture at the beginning of the piece, and it shows Saint Michael, a Caucasian Saint Michael, in the good, weighing weighing the souls of the people, and they're white, and on the scale, on the other half of the scale is the devil, who is black with curled hair and horns, and, you know, claws, you know, which is the evil soul, the black devil with frizzy hair and horns and claws, also weighing some of the same souls, being demonized and blackened. Where does this anti-black racism that exists in the world come from? If you are an African or of African origin, this is a question you have to ask yourself at least one day in your life, every day. The African man, the black man, is badly seen by a large portion of humanity. When he is in the Arab world, he is rejected. When he is in the Western world, despite all the signs of openness, westernization, or integration BS, racism and hatred are never far away in order to call him a monkey, a bubala. Everywhere he goes, he's always the victim of stereotypes which end up seriously harming him. Rejections, racism, hatred. As history has shown and on several or many occasions. But where does this attitude that other people have toward African people come from? Why is the historical origins of this rejection? When did it begin in the history of mankind, of humankind? This may shock some, but anti-black racism originated from religious sources. More precisely, on the religious basis of the so-called revealed religion, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. The religions that have the predominance of human beings in their clutches around the world, and that are both a fallacy. And of course, we as African people have many in those religions. What is the founding text of this racism? Well, it is a text that is better known as the Curse of Ham. Now, I used to talk about that kind of jokingly, you know, saying that, God said, you know, it's crazy down there. It's running amok, Sodom and Gomorrah, and all this hatred and all these things, and all this sin, you know. Cain killed Abel. Go to the land of Nod, you know. And then they continue to sin. So God said, you know what? I'm going to end this shit. So God, I'm going to find somebody. Oh, this dude, Noah, yeah. Hey, Noah. What? What? Who's that? It's me. It's God. Oh, wow. What's up? Listen, man, I'm tired of sin running rampant. What I'm going to do is I want you to build an ark. What? What's an ark? A big-ass boat. And these are the dimensions. And this is what I want you to build it from. And give you a time. And then at the appointed time, when it's all ready, I'm going to cause these animals to come into the ark. Because you know what I'm going to do? What you going to do, God? I'm going to flood the earth. The earth will be water everywhere. Everybody, I'm going to just drown every damn thing because I'm tired of this. And then your boat will land on some land, and then everybody's going to disembark, and they're going to go their ways, and I want you and your three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, and their three wives, and that will be the foundation of my new creation. Got that? Okay. So get busy, dude, because I'm tired of this. So Noah and his three sons and everybody started building the ark. And, of course, people started laughing because there ain't no water nowhere near to where he is, okay? Ain't no water nowhere near. So he built an ark and everything like that. Finally, it's done. And then animals start coming, male and female, two by two, male and female, all kinds of animals and birds and whatever start coming. And then they start feeling the drop. It's on. I mean, it's raining hard. And even the people who laughed at him trying to get on the ark, but no, you know, they drowned. And so Noah and his people, they owned the ark and they taking care of the animals and everything like that. And, you know, and it's still raining. It's going to rain for 40 days and 40 nights until finally it starts to subside. And he sends a bird out, a raven, and it doesn't come back. So that's to say, it's still bad out there. It's still treacherous out there. Sometime later, he sends the dove out, a white dove, and it comes back with an olive branch, saying that it's peaceful out there now. The ark, I think they say, yes, they say, because you know they've been looking for no. I'm telling you, man, it's the Christian religion has you can do crazy stuff. They have been people trying to find the Noah's Ark. Stop it. And so it lands on Mount Ararat, and supposedly, and the animals, they go to where they're supposed to go, however how far it is that they have to go. You know, so all those animals depart. And so Noah, feeling good about what has just been accomplished, he builds a vineyard. He has grapes. Grapes have seeds. So he builds a vineyard. After some time, he has enough, and he has some wine. He gets smashed, and it's hot out, man. So he's laying up in his tent. He's drunk, ass out. And so his son Ham comes in, and whoa, Dad, look at that, you know. And he leaves. And he tells us, because he laughs supposedly. He tells his two brothers, and his brothers walk backwards, and they cover their dad up so they don't look at their dad's nakedness. And then when Noah regains his consciousness, you know, coming out of that drunken stupor, he finds out what Ham had done. And he tells Ham, I'm going to curse you naked and to be servants unto your brother. I'm going to curse you black and to be servants unto your brothers, you know. And of course, since, and I don't, you know, in the Bible, it keeps saying, and Ham, who is the father of Canaan. Well, of course, Canaan is where the European Jews are now. Canaan is where Israel has been. Canaan is in the Holy Lands. So I'm telling you, all of this can be very confusing. And so Ham, and it keeps saying Ham is the father of Canaan. And of course, Ham is also the father of Nimrod. And you know Nimrod. Nimrod builds the tower, you know, because when you have a family, a close family, all of y'all pretty much speaking alike, right? You have the same verbiage. You see, it's part of who your family is, who your culture is, who your so-called quote tribe is. So, but once they, you know, went their ways, Ham, of course, African, black, Sham, Semitic people, not European Jews, Semitics, which is Arabs and so forth, and Hebrews, and of course Japheth, Caucasians, you know. And so if they came from that nucleus, they would still be speaking. So what God did, you know, is that when Nimrod built the tower and shot the arrow up, he struck down and confounded their tongues. I mean, I've always said this is a terrible indictment of God to do this, because one of the main things that human beings need to do is understand each other, have some ability to comprehend and to communicate. And so what God did was he struck down and he confounded their tongues, and everybody went their different ways to learn to hate one another. Thanks, God. Yeah, I did that. So anyway, so, you know, that's the story on that. But let's get deeper. Let's get deeper of why this is happening. And of course, this still ties in a little bit to what we were talking about with Francis Cress Welsing, that the European recognizes their position in the world, that they must control and dominate. This may shock, but anti-black racism originated from the religious sources, more precisely from the religious basis of the so-called revealed religion. These religions were revealed by God to human beings. Judaism through Abraham, Christianity. Well, of course, Abraham's the father of all three of these religions. Christianity and, of course, Jesus. And, of course, Islam through Muhammad, you know, through Hagar, Abraham's handmaiden, who they kicked out of the, who Sarah had gotten kicked out. And, of course, they said, we're going to protect you, Ishmael. You'll be a mighty nation. And, of course, out of there comes Prophet Muhammad and the formation of Islam. What is the founding text of this racism? Well, it is the text that better known as the curse of Ham, the text in the biblical book of Genesis, more precisely in the story of Noah and his sons, sons representing the ancestors of the nations. This is what the biblical book of Genesis says in chapter 9, verses 18 through 19. The sons of Noah who came out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Ham was the father of Canaan. You know, some saying he keeps saying that. These are the three sons of Noah. And it is their prosperity that peopled the whole earth. The biblical text explains that they are the ancestors of the nations that populated the earth after the deluge. What are these nations? According to the biblical text, there are three ancestors of the three nations that populated the earth after the deluge. These nations are Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Here is the passage from the Bible where the curse is mentioned. Genesis 9. 20 through 27. Noah started to cultivate the soil and proceeded to plant a vineyard. He drank from its wine. He became drunk and laid uncovered inside his tent. Ham, once again, the father of Canaan, saw his father naked and told his two brothers outside. But Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it across their shoulders. And then they proceeded to walk backwards and cover their father's naked body. While doing it, their faces were turned the other way, so they would not see their father's nakedness. When Noah woke from his drunkenness and found out what his youngest son had done to him, he said, "Curse be Canaan." Cursed his offspring. "Curse be Canaan. May he be the slave of the slaves of his brothers." He also said, "Praise be the Lord, the God of Shem. May Canaan be their slave. May God extend Japheth's territory. May Japheth live in the tents of Shem. And may Canaan be the slave of Japheth." At first glance, this text does not mention skin color of a people here. At first glance, one can not say who symbolizes, you know, between Shem, Ham, and Japheth, blacks, Africans, or whites, Europeans. At some site, the text does not say that Ham is cursed, since in this text, it is Canaan, son of Ham, who was cursed and struck with slavery, and therefore not Ham himself. These are the kinds of arguments often used by followers of the revealed religions to defend themselves when it comes to the subject. Well, it is because in Hebrew, the language which the book of Genesis was written, the term Ham refers to the idea of heat, blackness, or burnt. In the Pharaonic language, the term Cam means black, Kemet, black, Kemet, the black land, the black people of the black land. In these, Hebrew people have sometimes of their history stayed in Kemet. As the Bible says, it means that they were context between these Semitic people and African people, who are black people. We can then understand where this term Ham, term to designate the physical appearance of blacks, came from, which is found in the Bible. Ham is, by account of the context between Semitic people and African people in antiquity, a distortion of the term Cam or Kemet, meaning black, blackened in Pharaonic language. By the editors of the Bible, as Dr. Shikanta Jop explained in his founding book, Nations and Culture, it is therefore normal for Ham to be designated in the Bible as a source of the black people, a the African people, Ham. However, the traditions of the so-called revealed religions refer to Ham and his Bible descendants as a symbolic names to designate the people originating from Africa. If Ham is the ancestor of the first African people, then his biblical sons, Cush, Nubia and Sudan, Mizraim, Egypt, Pont, the Great Lakes region, and Canaan, Palestine and Syria, were originally African people. If then the curse occurs or concerns, according to the text, only Canaan, the son of Ham, how did we pass from the curse of Canaan to the curse of Ham? Well, it is an interpretation in the reading of the religious leaders of the so-called revealed religions, the priests, the popes, the rabbis, the caliphs, the imams, etc. You know, they had an agenda. Thus, according to the rabbinical commentary, such as Rabbi Midrash and Bereshit Rabbi, this text is interpreted as a fact that through Noah's ark during the flood, Ham committed a serious sin of sexual impurity against his father. What it means to see the nudity of his father. And thus, through Canaan, it was Ham who was cursed and turned into black, and his biblical descendants, Cush, Mizraim, Punt, and Canaan. In the Midrash Rabbi, page 293, Noah said to Ham, "You have made me incapable of doing things in the dark moment of the night. So your offspring, that is, your descendants, will be naughty and have a black skin." Robert Graves, Raphael Patel, gives us another insight into this curse in another Hebrew text. Their book entitled Hebrew Myths, from 1987, pages 192 to 1. "Moreover, since you have contorted yourself to see my nakedness, the hair on your little children will become wrapped until they become frizzy, and they will have red eyes. Your lips have joked about my misfortune. Yours are going to be swelled, and since you have lacked consideration for my nakedness, they will go naked, and their male organ, their genitalia, will be elongated enormously." Well, thank you. That ain't no damn curse. If you ever read, and it talks about that in the Jewish Talmud is what the Hebrews think, and believe me, the European Jews have used that, twisted that tremendously. The Jewish Talmud. You have elongated penises. According to these texts, African physical characteristics, being black skin, having frizzy hair, sometimes thick lips, etc., all these characteristics are in fact the mark of the curse. According to these texts, at the beginning of the creation, the first men were not black. And if there were some black, it means that they are the children of the devil and cursed. Thus, seeing a black, such as one can see in nature, fizzy hair, black complexion, etc., is seeing someone cursed. It is seeing a demon, the devil himself. Even the idea that blacks would have the most developed and biggest male organ in the world comes from these texts. Thus, we see how caricatures and stereotypes about the physiognomy of the blacks began in history. Physiognomy. Rabbi Maimonides, in his book, considered by the Jews to be the greatest in Jewish religious philosophy, The Guide to the Lost, Book 3, Chapter 51, tells this about black people. Their nature is similar to that of mute animals. And in my opinion, they do not reach the rank of human beings. Among the existing things that are inferior to man, but superior to the ape, So they are inferior to man, but they are superior to the ape. For they possess in a greater measure than the ape the image of likeness of man. Christianity, presenting itself as the heir of Judaism, these ideas of black being cursed by God, then passed into Christianity and were used by the church as justification for the enslavement of Africans, since through the text, it is written, let him be a slave of his brothers. Let him be a slave to his brothers. As Guillaume Herono shows in his book entitled The Story of a Curse, Noah's Drunkenness, The Story of a Cursed. These ideas of being black, cursed by God, then passed into Islam as well. This is why in the Quran, we find in Surah El Imran, the family of Imran, verses 106 to 107, it says, on the day when certain faces will be illuminated and others will be darkened, to those whose faces will be darkened, it will be said, have you disbelieved after having faith? Well, taste the punishment for having denied the faith. And then, and those whose faces will be enlightened, illuminated, they shall be in the mercy of Allah, where they shall dwell forever. We see that the dark faces are faces of infidels and pagans, and we will face punishment. On the other hand, the light faces will have the graces and the mercies of Allah. In the volume one of Tiberi's Chronicle, Imam, Persian historian and exalter of the Quran, Tiberi provides an explanation of Ham's curse by saying, yet may you know that all creatures have gone forth after Noah, may peace be upon him, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, the Arabs, the Persians, the white-faced men, the good people, the Jewish, the scholars, and the wise, and a race of Shem. And this is why, one day Noah was asleep. The wind lifted his clothes and uncovered his private parts without his notice. Japheth passed near Noah, whose private parts he saw. He began to laugh out loud. This is the white folks, right? This is Japheth. He began to laugh out loud and turn his father into ridicule without covering him. Ham, Japheth's brother, arrived. He looked at Noah, burst out laughing and joking, and passed by, leaving his father in the condition from which he had found him. Shem came after his brothers, and seeing Noah in the indecent posture, he turned his eyes away and hid his father's nakedness. Then Noah woke up and asked Shem what had happened, having heard that Ham and Japheth had passed him by, and laughed. He cursed them, saying, may God change the seed of your kidneys. After that, all the men and the fruits of the land of Ham became black. The black grape is one of the latter. In another passage of the book, we have the three sons of Noah left were first Shem, whose race the Arabs come from, the prophets and the good people. The second, Ham, is from him that the Negroes, the Ethiopians, who gave birth to infidel descendants originated. Now Ham's children became black because their father came to his wife in the dark, in spirit of Noah's prohibition, who cursed him, and the Most High God changed his seed, his semen of his kidneys, into black. The Arab Persian Tiberi. Okay. Thus, these religions, while expanding in the world, has spread everywhere the idea that the black man, the black human, is a pagan, is evil, cursed by God, a villain, an idolatrous, a sorcerer, etc. Thus, since black people were declared as cursed in these religions, all that black people have done have been declared to be pejorative and evil. His culture, his spirituality, and all his customs were demonized as a culture of evil, the culture of a devil. The so-called revealed religions have been for so long because of the writings and the teachings of so-called men of God, priests, popes, and imams, etc. The first torchbearers of racist stereotypes and racism towards African people were these people, popes, imams, preachers. It is the idea of black cursed by God that the origin of all these negative images and about Egypt and the pharaohs that are found in all the writings of the so-called revealed religions. Don't they talk about Egypt in that way? In the early days of abolition of slavery, the idea of black curse was one of the reasons why the KKK and why the Klan members, some Christians, attacked blacks whom they were considered as cursed by God and demons in order to lynch them, kill them, and burn their houses and possessions, since the church had used this idea of cursed black at the same time of slavery to justify it. The idea of black people cursed by God led the church to draw pompous images of beings she considered as good in white and images of the evil and the devil in dark or black color. It is the idea of black people cursed by God that philosophers of the age called enlightenment, who predominantly presented themselves as Christian, they were enlightened. Elaborated so many racist theories about black people. Let us take, for example, the case of Montesquieu, I guess, who said in his book, The Spirit of the Laws, we cannot imagine the idea that God, who is a very wise being, has put a soul, especially a good soul, in an all-black body. Therefore, according to the famous French author, a black body does not possess a good soul, but necessarily bad. He goes on to recite later in the same work by saying that it is impossible for us to suppose that these people, these Africans, are men, because if we consider them as men, we would begin to believe that we are not Christians ourselves. So he, as a good Christian, is educated to think that Africans are subhumans or children of the devil. It is this idea of black people cursed by God that gives birth to the negative vocabulary about the blacks. That's why the English language is our enemy. That's a good piece by Ozzie Davis. The English language is our enemy. Thus, we add the term black to all that is not good. Example, bad humor, black humor, black Thursday, black grinding, black dot, black list, having a black heart, etc. It is the idea of the black curse in the Islamic philosophy that is responsible for its rejection of blacks by Arabs and all the injustice and hatred that blacks suffer in the Arab world. Here is a song or a poetry intended for Congo children under the Belgium occupation in 1911. The song's author is a Catholic nun, Sisters of the Precious Blood. The booklet contains 68 songs, the songs being in their original verse in the Congo. Here is a translation in English. O Father Ham, what have you done? That's the name of the song, The Punishment of Ham. O Father Ham, what have you done? We suffer a lot. By God, we are punished. hardly ruthless, the punishment he had inflicted on you, inherited by us all. You mocked, you bad son. You had tainted your father, and Noah has a punishment to you, humiliated you, and thus Ham works always for his brothers. Ham works always as a slave to his brothers. And now your descendants, slaves here on earth, what a pity for thy people because of your curse. All blacks here regret your fault as you mocked your father. Your descendants laugh at you. They refuse your name. Still, if you want the blessings on earth, honor your father and your mother. And you get a picture of these damn nuns and all these Africans around them. For centuries, these ideas have been conveyed throughout the world by the so-called revealed religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, in their pulse of conquest, conversion, evangelicalism, and, of course, Islamization. Thus, all the followers of the revealed religions who live around the world have already heard, seen, or thought or incorporated this negative image of black people in their minds, which has led many people to reject and hate being black and hate black people. Thus, the African followers of the revealed religions have largely and consciously or unconsciously or subconsciously integrated this negative depiction of black people, of themselves, in their own minds. Given that the black human was declared cursed in these religions or their philosophies, and that it was taught even to be African, they have incorporated into their minds the idea that all that is black does is a pejorative and bad. It's a pejorative and bad. His culture, his spirituality, and all his customs were demonized as the culture of evil, the culture of the devil. Thus, many African followers of the revealed religions reject themselves and everything which is African. They do not like their complexion, so they lightened it. They don't like their hair, so they perm it. They do not like their traditions, their culture, their spirituality, and they treat them as evil. For quite a long time, it has been explained that the problems of Africa and the world come from the fact that blacks have been cursed by God, and that Africa and the black world will consequently always be the last of the class at all levels because God willed it. And they got a picture of Pat Robertson. Because Pat Robertson, I don't know if you remember when the earthquake happened in Haiti in 2010, he was saying that was God's curse because of what they had done. Because of having a successful revolution and throwing off the European, because they went against God. The problems of racism, as well as most of the stereotypes experienced by Africans throughout the world, originated from these religious beliefs. The curse of Ham and the picture of the curse black people being spreading to other areas. So before the anti-black racism existed for other reasons, this racism began firstly on the foundations of the so-called revealed religions. Before the intervention of this fable of the cursed black in the so-called revealed religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, there was no text giving negative image of Africans and Africans around the world. There was nothing. Man. We got some callers. Caller, good afternoon. Good afternoon, Marcus.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, dear brother.
All that you read there was a bunch of white lies.
Yes, it is, brother.
Arab lies.
Yes,
that's
it is.
All they've been doing, perpetuating lies. And, you know, black people should take that funny book and that Quran, and it don't make good toilet paper. It doesn't make good toilet paper, black people. Take it and dump it in the garbage can of history. Because it's all lies.
Yeah,
see? And then when you tell these people these things, they say, oh, you're disrespecting my religion. That is trash. That is not religion. That is garbage. And it's all allegory and stories.
Yeah.
Because snakes don't talk. Jackass don't talk. Okay? Dead men don't get up. Somebody asked the other day, said, oh, Jesus went and he raised Lazarus from the dead. Where is Lazarus now? Lazarus should be walking around on the planet same way then. He should, because if Jesus raised him from the dead, he should be living forever.
That's right. He shouldn't die no more. That's right.
Yes. It's foolishness and garbage and trash. You see? You know, and I don't care what the hell they say about me. I love being black.
Sure.
Okay, African, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Because I have everything. You see, nature was good to me. It gave me the best physique as a man, gave me the most beautiful woman on the planet, put me in the best place on the planet. It's just jealous. Jealousy. They're jealous of me. That's why they oppress me so much, give me hell. But I'm going back to the top where I belong, by the crook or the rod, whatever means necessary. Because our people waking up, they're not stupid. Our people not stupid again. They're waking up. Maybe this COVID or whatever the hell was a wake-up call to black people.
Well, okay?
But it's all lies.
Yeah, I agree. I think we are waking up, and I hope that we continue to do so. But I hope we continue to do it very quickly, because time is not on our side. But the people who these religions have been revealed to, these Europeans, European Jews, Judaism, mostly Caucasians, Europeans, Christianity, and those who just like want to be Europeans, Arabs, or the Semitic people. They are the Semitic people. The Muslims, Islam, and these three religions have been the detriment to African people, because it makes African people look at themselves in a negative light, because the religion has told them so. The religion makes them feel that way. And so how can, you know, here you're giving me a religion that makes me hate myself. And yet, you know, we don't understand that. But we believe that there's a salvation in there for us in this religion, just by believing in Jesus Christ. Or there's a salvation in that religion by believing that Allah, you know, because we believe in this religion. Now, Judaism, of course, is different, because they don't see converts, but damn it, they are the ones that manipulate it all. European Jews found a way to, they run it all.
Let them take their religion and shove it deep up in there whatsoever here, Brother Oshi. I will never, ever accept it, because I know the truth, and the truth has set me free. Let them take their religion and shove it where the sun don't shine, Brother Oshi, and keep on keeping on, good brother.
Thank you, man. Very much. Thank you, Brother Marcus. I appreciate you, man. Thank you. Yeah, you know, it's a shame. It's a shame we believe, you know, it's a saying, when you believe in things you don't understand, you suffer. That's why we are a very suffering people. We've been made to believe in theologies that are totally against us. You know, even when I was younger and I was watching the Ten Commandments, because I mean, I went to the theater with my uncle. My uncle was living in L.A. at the time, back in the 60s, the mid-60s, because we were still living on 19th Street then, and maybe 64 or 5, whatever. And he came to visit us, and he took me to the movies. Took me to see the Ten Commandments. And, it had the intermission thing so long, and of course, Technicolor, we didn't have no color TV back then, we didn't, you know. And so it was, and of course all of the technology of the time, the animations of the time and so forth, it makes you it captures your mind and makes you think in this way. You know? It trains your thinking and trains your mind to think in this particular way. And Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, the revealed religions, all of these things have had a deleterious effect on the minds of African people, a deeply adverse effect on the minds of African people, made us hate ourselves, hate our skin. Many African people who had wealth have done crazy things. I never forget when I was in Ghana reading about that woman who tried to lay in a tub of lye. She had some wealth, and she died because she hated herself. She hated the color of her skin. And you've seen people from Africa in here and everywhere. Bleaching cream is a serious problem globally. Because being dark-skinned, being melanated is something that many countries don't want. They don't want to be melanated. They don't understand that you are the first person. Everybody else came from you. They don't want that. Because the European, the Caucasian, have been able to manipulate the world to think that they are superior. And if it's African, it's evil, it's bad, inferior. This is a very serious problem. Because it is the problem why we cannot get together, why we can't unify, why we can't understand and love and respect ourselves and each other and come out of this mess and love and respect our brothers on the continent to come together to control the resources, to control the land, kick everybody else out. That's the real damn crux of a problem. The religions, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. That's the problem. Oh man, time flies. Oh. Well, appreciate all those who have listened. Oh, I got a caller at 404-573-404.
Okay,
family. Hey. How you doing? How you doing, Sister Lumumba? How are you?
I'm well.
Good, good. I am well too. I'm well, Queen. And
good. Very good. Mm-hmm. Good to hear you. Hear that. And I am smiling in honor of our dear, dear sister, Dr. Frances.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I'm going to do a piece on her. I'm going to do a piece on her. No, she deserves it. You know, I don't talk about sisters enough. In their contribution.
Yes, well.
Yeah.
And that's why we cannot, you know, disregard our sisters, mm-hmm.
Right.
Our mothers.
Right. She was on point in terms of what she was stating, at least as far as I'm concerned. I don't give a damn what anybody else says. And also, too, she utilized these Christian texts that supported this idea that being black is evil, being black is sullied and dirty, you know. And, of course, making us feel like we are inferior.
Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. And, but let me say, you know, I'm a Muslim, so I must come in the defense of the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
Let it not, I don't affiliate or denigrate the religion with what people do. People lie all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they will continue to lie because we know who they are. And African people have never subscribed inwardly. We knew we were the gifted people, the created people, the first people. And in those essays that you read, you would have to presuppose that in order for Ham to be cursed black, there were no black people there. But that's not true. We have to presuppose that, but that's not the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I like to say the story of Ham and Noah being drunk is not in the Quran. It's not in the Quran at all.
Mm-hmm.
So people rewrite what they want to write in order to subjugate the people of the planet, the natural people of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they propagate lies, especially the Europeans. and always have. And the age of enlightenment says that someone needed to be enlightened. You needed to be, you know. So rosemary people, and we will talk on, my brother. Thank you. I appreciated you. This program so much today. It was just so thank good you. To me and to myself. And now I'm smiling.
All right,
for the sister.
All right.
All right.
All right, my queen.
Peace, family.
Peace,
Hotep.
Peace, Hotep. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants. Think they can't do it out, and they shown hell damn it don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day, family, and I hope to see you here on Wednesday. Take care. Peace.